Pratipatitaya Pratibhotitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Puranamunina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamritavarshinim Bhagavatim Ashadashadhyayinim Ambatvamanusantatami Bhagavad-gītē bhavad-vaiṣṇī. It's 50.
What first one?
50. 50? Siddhim prapto yathā brahmā. Siddhim prapto yathā brahmā. Tathāpnoti nibhodame. Tathāpnoti nibhodhame samāsenaiva kaunteya samāsenaiva kaunteya niṣṭhā jñānasya yāpara niṣṭhā jñānasya yāpara siddhim prāptaha yathā brahma tathā apnoti Nibodha me samasena eva kaunteya nishtha jnanasya ya para. So here, starting from this chapter, which and this verse, which Bhagavan is just introducing what he's going to do, he's really going to give in a few verses a synopsis of the whole Gita and everything that. How to gain the antakarana shuddhi, and how that antakarana shuddhi is helpful to knowledge, and how knowledge takes place. So Swamiji, when he's writing his introduction to this, he says, what does this mean? Is Bhagavan going to give a whole other 17 chapters? No, because samasena means in brief. He's going to tell. So it's really actually really beautiful to see the whole thing, you know, put into a few verses. If you all have the this handout and the new handout, there's a long, long commentary. Shankar does a long commentary on it, so it's worth kind of spending your time reading it and studying it several times, because we're not going to do that here. It would take several months to do it. But everything in it's not that we're not touching on everything that's in it, you know, but I'm just saying that it'd be probably rewarding to spend some time on this last section with a very long commentary. Swamiji really gets into the heart of it. It's with a lot of time unfolding. It's really beautiful. So here, siddhim praptaha yathā brahma. Here yathā just means how. Siddhim praptaha. Prapta means one who has gained or attained. Siddhi. Siddhi, now from the previous, in the context of the previous verses, siddhi. Siddhim is an accusative. Siddhim prapta, the one who has gained antakarana shuddhi. So the qualified students means the adhikari, who through karma yoga really has gained this shanti, a mind that is very available for this knowledge. And actually the mind of the karma yogi is very close to the mind of the jnani, in terms of shanti, and in terms of also, what I would say, in terms of relative shanti, because your attitude toward the world of your experience, is Ishwara. Your attitude toward the world is attitude toward Ishwara. And Ishwara is Dharma. So what becomes primary for you is Dharma, because Dharma really is, the manifestation of Dharma is Ishwara. Mm-hmm. Say like that. Manifestation of the laws that also have a certain punya papa, they have a moral code. Moral code is ahimsa, abhaya. That's the moral code. We use this word moral code. It's a Western moral code. But when we talk about a moral code has to do with the well-being of yourself and others. Ahimsa, non-injury. Dharma is ahimsa. So may my being be in no way cause injury to anyone, to myself or to others. You know, that's the ahimsa. Ahimsa is the nature of Brahman. Abhayam, this beautiful word, abhayam, freedom from fear. That's a synonym. We want to know, well, what is Brahman? Brahman is ananda. What does that mean? Brahman is ananda, means the nature of Brahman is wholeness or completeness or fullness. You know, you could say the nature of Brahman is abhayam. Brahman, the nature of your being is something that is devoid of fear. Devoid of fear means it never at any time causes fear, nor is anyone, you're never afraid. Brahman is never afraid, nor is anyone ever afraid of Brahman. To me, that's so beautiful. No one's afraid of Brahman, and Brahman is not afraid of anyone. No one is afraid of Brahman. There's complete ahimsa, complete non-injury. So ahimsa, abhaya, is our highest value. Because it is yourself. It is who you are, absolutely non-threatening. And so when the non-threatening nature of your being becomes dominant, your mind is so safe. Your mind has a beautiful home. Because that's when we say the inner friend. The inner friend is just the buddhi's voice of that abhaya. You know? Complete safety. And so our upadhi, this body, mind, sense organs, through karma yoga, neutralization of raga, dvesha, seeing everything as dharma, where your highest value is really dharma. Because dharma, Ishwar, is an expression of dharma. What else is Ishwar? Ishwar is the expression of dharma. All of the laws, the order of the creation, all of that is dharma. And that expression of Ishwara is the expression of Brahman, right? This is Brahman's expression, Maya. It's Maya, it's Mithya. But it is an expression of Brahman. And what is Brahman? It's absolute shanti, absolute abhayam, absolute peace, absolute safety, absolute wholeness. Right? So, karma yoga, when I see everything as Ishwara and everything I do is really not about the interest, it's not in raga dvesha. My likes and dislikes are so very secondary to dharma, to Ishwara. The commitment is to Ishwara. And the commitment is to Ishwara not as an unknown, but as a knowing Ishwara, which is knowing Brahman, which is knowing myself. So I'm an adhikari for that. I'm a mumukshu, which becomes a jignyasu. The mumukshu, you start as a mumukshu, you have a desire to be free from suffering, to be whole and complete, for this samsara to be over. You don't want it anymore. You have a desire to be free. Moksha comes from much, to be free. Something. Let me be free of all of this suffering. You know, that is endless. By the very nature of the creation, if I'm attached to anything in the creation, there's definitely suffering. That attachment brings suffering with it. Because there's nothing in the creation that's not subject to change and birth and death. There's nothing stable. So any amount of attachment is just going to be suffering. But that's not true when my attachment is to dharma. Because then my attachment is to Ishwara. You know, it's not to a thing. You know. It's to doing every moment what is being asked of me to be done. And to even talk like that, I have to see the whole creation that includes my body, mind, sense organs as Ishwara. Otherwise, who's asking me to do it? Right? This scene that I find myself in, I'm participating in. So what is my participation in the situation that I find myself in? What should be my highest for me is what is being asked of me in this situation in terms of dharma, because dharma is what is most natural to you. The golden rule, that's ahimsa, golden rule. Right? Non-injury, then how do I kind of operationalize that? Well, how I would want others to treat me, let me treat others like that. is I don't want others to treat me, let me not treat other people like that. It's very inborn, it's very innate. You know, so let that be my highest value. And as I slip and slide around that, let that be my sadhana. You know, it's not like dharma can be your highest value and you're not living up to it in this way or that way. That doesn't matter. That's your sadhana. That's just how it is. You know, and until I'm really complete in my knowledge. So there's an emotional lag time that takes some time for my mind to mature in the light of my knowledge. That's what's such a beautiful thing. So that siddhim praptaha means the one who has gained that siddhi means that your whole being, everything about you in terms of karma yoga, in terms of your relationship with the world, is one of a relationship with Ishwar, a relationship with Dharma. It's not about you or your likes or dislikes or kartratvam, I want this and I need this and I want that. No, it's about what is Bhagavan asking of me in this moment? And that's what I care about. If that's what I care about, if that's what where my attachment is, then these other things, the raga, dvesha, likes and dislikes, and the krodha, the anger, and the jealousy, and the envy, and all these things that are born out of that kama, all of these are negative, hurtful emotions are born out of kama, out of our raga, dvesha, out of our desires. But when I'm not interested in those things, they can be there and I'll enjoy them and whatnot, only if they're in line with Dharma. That's the karma yoga buddhi. And that gives me a relative shanti, a beautiful shanti, which is only a hair's breadth from the jnani, from the mind of the jnani. And so that mind, as through sadhana, your mind is naturally, by your attitude, maturing. And it's maturing also because that's karma yoga is for the mumukshu. The mumukshu becomes the jignasu, the one who wants to know, because you've understood that what's causing all of the suffering is really just ajnanam, it's just ignorance of the ananda or the wholeness of your own being. It's self-ignorance that causes the problem. And so, as a jignasu, one who desires to know, to gain self-knowledge, that karma yoga just is really operationalizing, you know, what you're knowing to be true. And as you own up that knowledge, what was karma yoga just becomes who you are. See, that's kind of the hair, that's just the slightest little shift, but it's a big shift. You know, it's like recognizing your own being. Like I've kind of been doing these meditations lately where your buddhi is gently, I'll say something like, gently focus on your own presence. And the buddhi then is as though meditating, contemplating upon you, you know, and enjoying your own presence. But there's this slight little shift to where then you just be yourself, right? The buddhi can still be enjoying your presence, that silence of yourself, but that self is you, so you might as well just be you. There's a very, very subtle little movement there. But that becomes, that subtle little movement is the reality. So you be you, and once you know who you are, you be you, you are that, you are that, and the buddhi, you know, enjoys you. You are you. The buddhi enjoys you. And the buddhi enjoying you, being rooted in you, then becomes a friend to all beings. Because enjoying you, enjoying the ananda of yourself, like that, then you become a friend to all beings. If I say inner friend, it's you. You know, when in meditation, when we say be and invoke that inner friend, where we start that way is that You know what it is to be an outer friend, just in samsara. You know what that is. You've been kind to people. You've loved people. You've cared for people. You've been a good listener. You've been compassionate. You've given people that you love and respect the benefit of the doubt. And often, you do that for others, but it would never have occurred to you to do that to yourself. And so instead of the outer friend, but that you know, you start to be an inner friend. And that, this is all just within samsara. I can just teach my clients this and students this all the time. You know, that's all just within samsara, but it's huge. If you can learn how to be kind and a friend to yourself like you are to others, like you are to your plants or you are to your animals, you can, you know, once you do that, your mind right then and there gains a level of relaxation that it did not have before. It may not ever have even thought about doing that. And what that means is it never thought about doing that. That means that all up until the time that it did start doing that, whatever that transition took place, up until that time, it was behaving toward yourself, means yourself, your body, your mind, your emotions, your worries, behaving, talking to yourself as you were talked to when you were little. Mm-hmm. That's what we call an introject. So, and you won't even notice it. You will not notice it because it's been taking place since you were an infant. So why would you notice it? It's never been any different. People don't even necessarily listen to how they're talking to themselves. They're just talking to themselves. It's how they react to themselves. But it's, again, it's almost like the atmosphere. You're not noticing it. You're not noticing that condition in which your mind is living. You know, like say you have a violent father and you're always having to tiptoe around in your home because you have this violent father who's there creating this scary atmosphere, threatening atmosphere all the time. Well, you've lived with that since you were born. And so when have you not been with that? As long as he's alive and he creates the ambience of the home, you live with that, you're living with it, live with it, live with it. You interject it, that becomes the environment. So you're living just within samsara, without nothing to do with Vedanta. You're living in a very tense, very tense, hypervigilant state of being. You're living with hypervigilance. Because the anger, the rage, or whatever it is can happen at any time, and does happen at any time, not at one particular time, it's not at 5 o'clock every evening, it's at this odd time, and this time, and this time, and this time. There's no pattern. That means that you're in a state of complete hypervigilance. And so, even when we move away from our home, we still are in that state of hypervigilance and worry and defensiveness and fear. You know, fear and ready to protect yourself in this way or the other, because that was the condition. And now it's just internalized condition. You know? And so when we discover that we can be a friend to ourselves as we are to others, all of a sudden, everyone inside is dancing for joy. It's like there's a chance, you know, for somebody inside to love me, to give me safety, a safe environment. This is all something that we these are things that we can cure within samsara, without self-knowledge. So we teach our clients this, you know. Because just think of it, you as a mumukshu, you become a mumukshu for the first place. It's a tremendous, tremendous grace. That's what we call Ishwara Anugraha, the grace of Bhagawan, that you even are a mumukshu. It's a huge thing to, all of a sudden your mind has this space to ask this question, who am I really? What is really happening? What is the truth of all of this? That self-reflection, who am I really? That's considered huge blessing through crores and crores and crores of punya that even allow you to have a question like that. But in Kali Yuga, when you have that question, we still have all kinds of baggage. Just because of our upbringing, the various social conditions that we find ourselves in. And so, how to start the process of healing the wounded nature of Kali Yuga. Yeah, the wounded nature of Kali Yuga. How do we start healing? Well, maybe the very first step is inner friend. It's something so powerful, so amazing. Once my unconscious and my conscious mind and unconscious mind realize now that there's somebody inside who cares, that observing witness, you know, the one who is the superego, if you want to say, the one who talks and comments, the commentator, is actually a good person who loves me and trusts me and thinks that I'm a good person, gives me the benefit of the doubt, and wants to help. Being with Swamiji, that's what it's like to be with Swamiji, somebody who loves me, that cares about me, that wants to help. There is no critic, doesn't exist. So I say such a good role model, you know? Such a good role model. There's somebody who only loves me as I am. And if you need something, well, we can work on that, doesn't matter at all. And that's what I have to be in. I have that. You have that at times where people discover that you allow that one to be the one who is with you, who's the commentator, who comments on you. And that brings about a level of shanti that you are not used to. And with that level of shanti, the mind then has the safety to grow and to mature and to change in the light of this knowledge. So perhaps that inner friend is maybe a extremely important kind of first step that allows so much the freedom to change. Because there's an ahimsa there. There's a safety there. And so as that change starts taking place, and the other things become more and more real, like all of these other things we do, like things like welcoming or having this dialogue with people that we're having problems with, or trying to live in Ishwara Srishti instead of Jiva Srishti. All of these things become meaningful when there's a support system inside that's positive. That inner friend resolves into the nature of yourself, which is by its nature inner friend. See what I mean? So these are all of these things, they may seem simple or whatnot, they are simple. The problem is, it's not that they're not simple. They're simple, they're obvious once they're said. All that has to happen in your mind is to do it. Karma yoga, that's the difference between jnanam and karma yoga. The difference is this: with karma yoga, antakarna shuddhi, you need to make efforts. With knowledge, we don't. Like, well, somebody asked, maybe it was Michael, I forget who asked this question. You do have to make an effort to gain knowledge, to get yourself into a situation where your pramana, the pramana, whatever that is lining up with the object of knowledge. So you have to get yourself there, you know. But if you're there, like, was that you?
It was Rosa.
Okay, yeah. Okay. That's a good question. It's a really important question. So, but just to reiterate, now, if there's that painting over there, and I'm here, and so all I have to do is open my eyes, and if my mind is not daydreaming, I can't stop that perception from taking place. My job is to get myself here and from the painting. That's true. But in terms of the knowledge taking place, the mind, using the pramana, whatever the appropriate pramana is, simply has, and the object, if all three are there, knowledge takes place. This is not, there's no effort involved other than getting yourself into position. We say, yes, that's true. But there's no effort. Now, with antakarna shuddhi, there is karma involved, manasa karma. Karma of having the will to, the conviction, the sankalpa, to work on something. To use your experience that you're having as a sadhana, all experience that you have, is really, it's either Ishvara or it's sadhana. That means Ishvara means I'm appreciating that karma yoga buddhi is there, that jnanam is there, and I'm really just doing what is to be done. That's it. That's what I do. I do what is to be done. And I enjoy Bhagavan. And I enjoy my own being. It's a very, very simple thing. When the raga dvesha, are not in operation, when the raga dvesha are in operation. Remember, raga dvesha means that which is not dagda bija, not burnt seed. Raga dvesha means I need this to be happy. I need it to be like this. Then the jiva is just up and running. Right? So when that raga dvesha is not there, then it's just Ishvara. When the raga dvesha is there, there's discomfort. Does she have something?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's okay, Tibbs. When she's been doing really well with her hunting lately. Two a day at least.
They've been a lot by my house.
Huh?
Yeah. There'd be cats by my house I've been bringing lots.
It must be this season, yeah.
Off topic, could you turn the light up a little bit?
Sure.
Thanks. Thank you.
Yeah.
Door's closed.
Oh, no wonder. Sorry, Tibby. Okay. So, yeah, the door is not supposed to be closed. Okay. So for a mumukshu, for a jignasu, let me put it like this, that adhikaritvam, that being a qualified student, we all come to this knowledge with some enough qualification for this knowledge to be meaningful for us. But say, here's Uttama Adhikari on this end, or for you all of you to be this end, right? So here's the Uttama Adhikari, and here's the Mandana Adhikari. Uttama means, your mind is, that Antakarana Shuddhi is there. You just have to be told. This pramana just has to be wielded, and you're fine, you can leave. Yeah. Because already all these raga dvesha's are gone. You just need an unfoldment to really see. Not that it takes place in 5 minutes, but you don't have baggage. None of us are like that. Right? So she says, forget it. You take some time. You need some time for that. Yeah. That Uttama Adhikari. So we come, here's the Mandana. This means you need the most work that could possibly be imaginable, you can imagine, and still want this knowledge. That's Mandana. So it just depends on what you've done before in terms of working on yourself. So you can be, but we're all going to be somewhere in here, right? We'll all be somewhere in here. And so because of that, we have things to work on. There is sadhana, And that sadhana, the greatest teacher for sadhana is your pain. Pain is amazing, actually. Emotional pain is an amazing thing once you look at it that way. Because when it's emotional pain, that's jiva srishti, is present right now. It is here right now, and it's malleable. Just like your thoughts, you can change, you have this thought, then you can decide to have this thought. You can have this attitude towards something, or you can have another attitude towards something. You can change. If you're ready and courageous to work on these attitudes that are pain-producing, you can work on them with an immediate result. Immediate result. You might have to work on the same thing again, but as you work on it, immediate result. Like, let me give you an example. If somebody has done something to you, somebody you care about, that matters to you, who cares about anybody else, they don't matter to you anyway, so it doesn't matter what they do. But somebody who you're attached, some attachment to, they matter to you. They looked at you funny, or they said something that you took the wrong way, or they rebuffed you in some way or another. and really hurt your feelings. So you're feeling that burning pain in your heart, because they hurt you. And it doesn't just go away either. It doesn't go away. Instead of going away, what's happening, until you start doing something about it, instead of it going away, your mind is just rotating around it, you know, just kind of keeping that hurt alive, because that hurt is producing different types of thoughts, and those thoughts are kind of a web around that hurt. And so you find that as you're being with it, it's not going away. In fact, it can even be becoming worse. Okay, so that's the situation. So now you've learned some things about how to be with that hurt. One simple thing you can do, just very simple, is just say, it's okay, you can be with me. Where you welcome it. No resistance, you just welcome it. Don't push it away. And that from there, depending on your level of how much your knowledge is available to you at that time, when you're welcoming it, then there's no resistance to being with that feeling, which means no resistance being with that person. Because you're welcoming it. You know? And the next thing, place you can go, there's different pathways. When we're in karma yoga, there's many, many different ways to do the same thing. But I'm just giving you one example. So you welcome it, and then you start to bring in your knowledge and realize that your ananda, your happiness or your wholeness, is not affected in any way by that person or that feeling. Nothing can do anything. You actually, truly, don't need people to be a particular way or the world to be a particular way at all. Because the source of the ananda is your own being. And say you know that, but because of emotional lag time, these types of reactions happen and carry you away. Well, you can just welcome it. You just welcome it, be with it, talk to it, find out what's really bothering you about it, and then bring in the knowledge of the source of the truth of the whole thing. And then you'll find at that time, that problem dissipates. It goes away. We're not talking about spending years on it. We're talking about actually bring in the light of your knowledge how to be with these feelings and emotions in a way that allows them to dissipate. But for you to be willing to do that requires a certain level of maturity. Even to be willing to do that, it's a big thing for you to be willing to do these things, because there's all kinds of layers of resistance to doing these simple things. Like, for instance, you know, I'm not going to do that. That person really hurt me and they deserve my rage. Really, there's all different things that stop you from resolving the problem, as though not resolving the problem, as though somebody gets retribution from your not resolving the problem of some sort. There's all kinds of things like this. These are all immaturities that we slowly, one by one, overcome, that allow us to do these ridiculously, beautifully simple sadhanas. They're simple, simple, simple sadhanas that are highly effective, but once we do it, work. Okay? So, some effort is required. That's why he says siddhim praptaha, the attainment of this accomplishment. It's a siddhi. It means it's something you've worked for. There's the word siddhi is the accomplishment. The sadhaka is the one who is using the sadhana to accomplish the sadhya, the thing to be accomplished. So you've got the sadhaka. You've probably heard this word, sadhaka. I'm a sadhaka. You know, I'm a seeker. I'm a sadhaka. I'm using these sadhyas, these sadhanas, these techniques, these means, in order to achieve this given thing, antakarna shuddhi. And I have become, and they have been achieved, siddhi. The achievement itself is the siddhi. So here, in this verse, which is actually, the question, now this is Krishna saying this, how is it, you know, siddhim praptah, that one who has gained this antakarana shuddhi, you know, how then do they, having gained the antakarana shuddhi, how do they gain Brahman, tata, that means the other side of the yata, in English you would say it, how is Brahman then gained? They gain the antakarana shuddhi, then how is Brahman gained, which is nishta jnanasya para, which is the supreme culmination of knowledge. That supreme, I'll explain that, the supreme para, nishta, culmination, clarity of knowledge. Jnanasya nishta para. So he says, how does that nishta, jnana nishta, which is Brahman, how does that take place? So, hey Kaunteya, Krishna, hey Kaunteya, Nibodhame, let me explain that to you, right? Listen to me. Nibodha means understand what I have to say here. Nibodhame, understand me, what I have to say here. He says, I will tell you samasena. I'm going to explain this to you in brief. Means I'm going to tell you the whole thing. This is the synopsis of the Gita. I'm going to explain this whole thing, the attainment of that karma yoga, buddhi, and then how does that, for one who has gained that, how then do they obtain this jnana nishta, this culmination of knowledge, which really is Brahman? How does that take place? Give me a chance to make that clear, samasena, in brief, to you. Okay. There's another important part here. That, how do you obtain that jnana nishta, which is Brahman? This is the thing. Within samsara, there is never, first of all, a culmination of knowledge. Because in Maya, everything is infinitely divisible and can be viewed from an infinite number of perspectives. So in fact, the more we know, the more we know that we don't know. That's the plight of gaining knowledge in Maya. You understand? Swamiji uses the example of, just think of the knowledge you have is likened to like a little pen light. So you have a little pen light that gives this little thin beam of knowledge. And so you have all this little beam of clarity, this little beam of knowledge, and there's very little that you don't know. There's very little that you are aware of not knowing, right? Because it's just around the edges, that small little thin beam, just around the edges, that those are the area where you're aware of your ignorance, right? But as the beam becomes bigger, your knowledge of your ignorance becomes more. Because you're at the edges, you know, of your knowledge become so much more. And then what if you have a big floodlight? Then you're so aware, huge amount of ignorance. That's why they say a pundit is the most humble person, because they're just drowning in the ignorance that they're aware of. Right? They have all of this knowledge, but all of that knowledge is just illumining more and more and more and more ignorance. But for Brahman, it isn't like that. Brahman, which is the very being of everything that exists equally, from its own standpoint, it has no parts. It's not big, it's not large, it's not any color, it has no attributes, it is the non-dual substantive. Right? And so you either know it or you don't. You don't partially know Brahman. You know Brahman or you don't know Brahman. You say, well, I know the right side of Brahman, right? You know? And there's not going to be any ignorance left. There's infinite ignorance in Maya. Within duality, infinite ignorance, infinite knowledge. You can never get to the end of it. There's no culmination at all. In fact, it's just an infinite exposure of ajnanam. But in terms of the truth of the whole thing, that isn't the case. There is one without a second that is completely known because it can't be incompletely known. Because there's no parts. There's no two ways to know it. There are no sides. Oh, I know the right side of Brahman, but not the left side. I know the middle part, but not the sides. There are no parts. This is so such a beautiful thing to understand, even when you're doing contemplation just on your own being, which is Brahman. There's no possibility of what is non-dual and has no parts, and free from time and space, for you to have to be a part of Brahman. We think like this, well, I'm a jiva, I'm a part of Brahman. No, you're as a jiva, this body, taking jiva to being only this body, mind, sense organs, you're a part of Ishvara. Right? This is a part of Ishvara, this is a part of Ishvara. Everything that exists is a part and parcel of Ishvara. Right? But the self, the self, Ishvara's self, which is Brahman, Ishvara's me, right? That's not an object within duality. Your being, say just for Ishvara, Ishvara's self is not a being up in heaven. It's not a jiva. It doesn't have arms and legs. It's not a part. It's like yourself is not a part. You can't objectify yourself. You can objectify your body and your mind and your thoughts and your moods and your emotions. All of these are objectifiable. They exist within time and space. They're a part of the whole. Right? Everything that you've taken to be yourself actually is an objectifiable part of the whole. And it's the same for Ishvara. Everything that exists within time and space is objectifiable. It's changing. It's subject to beginning and end, birth and death. Everything in its infinite creation. But it's the substantive, the self of Ishvara, Brahman, is the being from which time and space comes. It itself is totally free of time and space. And so therefore, Brahman is not big or large. It doesn't have an upside or a downside or a right or left. Right? Because it's not an object in time and space. It's the very being which all things in time and space that come into being and go out of being depend upon for their being. But it itself is free of all of that. Now when I look at your being, we say exactly the same thing. Your being, right, is free of time and space. It's not big or small. It's non-dual. And so what is the difference between Ishvara's being and my being? There is no difference. There can't be a little Atma within a big Brahman. You know? This little Atma am in this big infinite Brahman. No. Because Brahman has no time or space. So it's not big or small. You have no time and space. You're not big or small. You're not an object within the creation. You have big Brahman in the creation and little Atma in the creation. That's not what it is. You have big Maya Upadhi. And the little upadis that are within the big Maya Upadhi, you can say that. In your dream, you have the dream. And you have all the creatures running around in the dream. They're all part and parcel of one Ishvara, one dream. This is the same here. But your being is Brahman. It's not like Brahman. It's not a partial. You say, well, I am Brahman, but you know, because I'm a jiva, it's a problem with terminology, I'm a jiva, I only have a partial experience of Brahman. I am Brahman, but my experience of Brahman is only partial, because I have a limited mind after all. Well, if you have a partial experience, how can you have a partial experience of something which is non-dual and has no time or space? It's not possible. That's an impossibility. You see that? Your being is not an object within time and space to be big or small. Brahman, Ishwara's self, is not an object in time and space to be big or small. These concepts don't even apply at all. And so the me, this me that you are, the conscious being, the me that you are, is Brahman. It is Ishwara. I say it is Ishwara because this Maya has no being apart from Brahman. This Maya Upadhi that is coming into existence and going out of existence, it has no being at all apart from Brahman. It is Brahman. So I am Ishwara. I am Brahman. I am Ishwara. And here's this Upadhi, right? Let me put it this way. When you have a dream, you are the dream and you're every character in the dream. You have a dream, that you have a dream, say you have a lucid dream if you want to be fancy. You have a lucid dream, and so the whole dream, you are. And there are many characters in the dream, you're all of those characters too, but you're identified with one in particular, right? But nevertheless, whether you're identified with one in particular or not, doesn't make any difference. You're still the whole dream. You're all the beings in the dream, and you're also the one you're identified with. So right now, here I am, right? This body, mind, sense organs is me. This whole creation is me. Everything in this creation is me, right? And everything in this creation that is me, that is subject to time and space, is Maya. It means it's coming into being and going out of being, but enjoys me as itself. That's just the fact of it. That's what I have to own. That's what I have to know and recognize. And so as I own that and recognize that and get to know myself, then I become, this me that I am becomes much more dominant in my experience. Because my mind is relaxed. Your mind is relaxed and not contributing a lot of stress, then the very swabhava, your own nature, is what is dominant. Do you see how that would be? That's why when you do some of these meditations, you just let yourself relax, deeply relax. Accept welcome everything that's there. Why? Just so that you can relax, so that your being is what is dominant, rather than the different tensions and emotional stresses that you're producing by that stress. When you're welcoming, you're not producing those kind of stresses. You're not having all of those negative experiences just by welcoming. Yeah. Relaxation. You become dominant. In meditation, you get to know who you are. But then there comes a time when you're never not meditating because you're dominant. You know what I mean by dominant? You know, you're not competing with the ajnanam born, these ignorance born reactions and stresses. And when those ignorance born reactions and stresses are generated, then you just say, it's okay, you can be with me. Just relax. It's okay. Have dialogue with them. Be with your knowledge. So, anyway. That culmination of knowledge that takes place, that's why I went through this whole thing, this Jnana Nishtha, which is supreme. It's supreme because it's the only place where there is a culmination of knowledge. That point of culmination of knowledge is what we call Brahman. Jnana Nishtha, the Nishtha means you can't go any farther. If I say that in terms of cell phones, if I have Jnana Nishtha, it means there's clarity. There just aren't any more doubts to work out. I can't go any farther because the nature of my own being is fully recognized. The nature of the mithyatva of this is fully recognized. I can't recognize it more. I can go on appreciating within Maya all of the different connections and all different types of growth in the antakarana, but the mithyatva of the creation, my own swarupa, I can't go any farther. Can't, because it's known. There is nothing like that in duality. You can always go farther. because you're always opening up new vistas of exploration. It's infinite, but not in reference to your being. There is an end game here because it's non-dual. And so there is a culmination to that knowledge. So Krishna says, let me tell you about this just briefly. Let's pull it all together so you really understand it in these next few verses. There's really very few verses left now, 15 verses or 20 verses. So we'll stop there. Om Swasti Prajabhyam Paripalim Tham Nyayena Margena Mahim Mahishaha Go Brahmane Vyashubhamastu Nityam Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu Kale Varshatu Parajanyah Prithivi Sasya Shalini Desho yam sho bharahitaha Brahmana santu nirbhayaha Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha Sarve bhadrani pashyantu Ma kaschit dukkha bhag bhavet Asato ma sargamaya Tamaso maan jyotirgamaya Mrityorma amatangamaya Om Purnamadav Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha Harihi Om.
Is it, could you explain, jignasu? It seems
jignasu.
To be synonymous with...
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
When you first come to this teaching, it's usually with a desire for liberation. That comes from the root mooch. So mumukshu. You hear that reduplication? Mumu, mumukshu. But that, as the teaching is unfolded, you know, you realize that that desire for liberation really is a desire for knowledge because yourself already is free. The problem is the problem of ignorance. So jignasu, like mumukshu, the jignasu comes from nya, nyanam. So when that reduplicates, it's jignya instead of jagnya. That changes to an e just by rule. So jignasu. So mooch is the other one. Mumu, that just stays the same, mumu, mumuch, where the su becomes mumukshu, the cha goes to ka. So mumukshu, the desire to be free, to be liberated, converts into the desire to know, to gain knowledge, to gain self-knowledge, because that is what is necessary to be free, because yourself is already free, the problem is ignorance. So you become a jignasu. So the first sutra of the Brahma Sutras is Atato Brahma Jignasa. Now having become a mumukshu and having become a dikari, I have a desire to know that. Atato brahma jignasa. Now, therefore, there is the desire to know Brahman. That means that I've recognized the problem, viveka, vairagya, all of that. See?
So you could say mumukshu converts into a jignasu after a while.
Yeah.
Getting some knowledge.
Yeah, because the teaching makes that clear. That moksha really is knowledge. It's not that you gain knowledge and then you do something to become liberated. The knowledge itself is the liberation, because yourself is already free. It's a nice thing.
If the Maya party is infinite, right?
Yeah.
The unconscious material is that's also infinite.
How much of that is available to this particular incarnation, I don't know, but it's true that the karma is infinite because the jiva is beginningless.
Yeah. And so by gaining more knowledge, it's the knowledge then that kind of
the self, yourself that's free, has no karma.
Right. It's the stillness.
Yeah, the self has no karma at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's who you are. Your being is free of karma. But the karmas that have accrued to the jiva, that ajnanam-based ahankara, are beginningless. That's what we call sanchitta. The sanchitta karma is beginningless. There's no end to it. You have to say it's infinite because there's no beginning. So it's.
So the thing being though that if you work in your unconscious material without the knowledge that like you are the Atma, right? You could really fall into forever working on yourself.
Well, yeah, that's true. Even Jung talks about that. But the thing is, a different way of looking at that is that, say, for this particular incarnation, there's certain, even though the unconscious is a vast reservoir, there are certain traumas that are really impeding my freedom of expression in this life, that things that are really hurting me, things that I've accrued along the way, and those things need to be worked on and resolved. On a relative level, in order for me to have any type of relative happiness as a human being. And so that's why people go to therapy or they work on themselves and we do all of these type of things to try to overcome these painful complexes or habits that we have or ways of thinking that we have that cause pain. So even though you're not going to empty out your unconscious by any means, you can get to the bottom of the barrel of the big complexes that are really inhibiting your happiness, your relative happiness.
And that's the symbol of Dakshinamurti, putting his foot in that little.
Yeah. But for Dakshinamurti, it goes further, because we're talking about self-knowledge, but he has his foot gently resting on this little ahankara, you know, that's kind of happy down there. You know, because it's Bhagavan's foot, you know, all of Bhagavan's knowledge. So it's kind of resting down there, you know, with his foot being held nicely in place.
If you know it's Bhagavan's
foot. Yeah,
right.
By the knowledge, you know. Dakshinamurti's just his knowledge just keeps him down there happily in place.
Well, the grace comes from the Guru's feet.
Yeah.
So,
yes, they are. Yes, that's nice. Yeah, that's beautiful. But you should look at, you know, when you see the different pictures and whatnot of Dakshinamurti and ours at the temple, that little guy is kind of happy down there. He's been like this, and the foot is just resting there, so he's held nicely in place. He can't cause any trouble. you know.
Yeah, and his vanity is still intact because
he's got his
long
mustache. Cute.
But just to follow with that, so Vedanta is not the path of having to like clear all your karma or something like
that. No, in fact, that's an impossibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the fact is that you yourself has no karma.
Right.
Yeah. And then there's nothing, when this body dies, there's no jiva left. The jiva is a product of ignorance. There's no jiva even right now. There's just the shell of a jiva. I mean, there's a shell of a jiva. For Jnani, there's the shell of a jiva. Because the prarabdha is still running out. But there's really no jiva because I am Brahman. I know who I am. So there's that agnanimous not there. And as the kind of the emotional baggage and, you know, the kind of the, what do you call it, emotional baggage and habitual ways of behaving drop off over time. So that then the way you behave is just as a jnani. You're not behaving as an ajnani, you behave as a jnani. You think as a jnani, you feel as a jnani. You know, you are a jnani without the emotional baggage is dropping off over time. And I think that emotional baggage drops off much more quickly. You know, you expedite it by knowing how to be with it in a way that is healing. You know, learning, knowing how to be with your complexes and with your hurts and traumas. You know, in a way that is really helpful, instead of just waiting for them to fall off by themselves. You know, giving them what they need. But you have to know how to do that, and you have to want to do it.
So the karma is really caused by the ignorance, in fact.
Oh, yeah.
Why it accrued, because that's why it was formed. Mm-hmm.
And it's beginning. There's beginningless ignorance. There's no start to the ignorance. Otherwise, you can't go backwards. You can't. If you have knowledge, then you're not going to have ignorance. That's why the ignorance is beginningless, but it comes to an end. But I think I think we grow into our mumukshutvam and our jignasa. You come with enough of it for this to be what you're doing. But it matures. Even the jignasa itself, it matures until that's all you care about. You don't care about retributions or anything like that, or raga dvesha. It's meaningless. You know, this is what matters. But that's all part of the maturing process also. You see what I mean? I know from my own self experience how that has matured. To where you start out with just letting those things be there. You don't pay that much attention to them, you don't really do anything about them. They're just there and you suffer them and do whatever little things you do, but it's just not primary. There comes a time when your shanti, your knowledge is what's primary. The other things don't have a value. You don't want them. There's no gain. You don't see any gain in them. You know, and so then the gain is into taking care of them and resolving them. That's what you want to do. You don't want to do anything else except take care of them and resolve them. And that's close to the end.
I mean, rather than going for revenge.
Yeah, that becomes totally meaningless.
Right. And then rather, antakarna shuddhi, could you explain a little bit more? I've heard it for a million years.
Well, when we say, this is an important thing too, because the translation is not good, purity of mind. That can be misunderstood into some sort of like Jesus walking on the water type of thing, or an imagined saintliness. If saintly, you can use the word saintly if you bring it down to earth, you know, and let that be a practical term. All we really mean by antakarna shuddhi in our context is a mind that is really available for gaining this knowledge. You have to have enough antakarna shuddhi for your mind to have the shanti to be present to this knowledge. And then with the knowledge, that antakarna shuddhi naturally grows. The mind enjoys a natural shanti. The expression of the mind is, in a sense, the expression of Ishwara. Right? So Swamiji says your heart has to become as big as Ishwara. That's true. Why shouldn't it be? Who's it going to be as big as? The jiva? You know? Jiva is ajnanam, right? So your heart becomes as big as Ishwara because it doesn't ask Bhagavan to be different. It's more what is asked of me to do at this time. It's not that you should be different or you should be different or the situation should be different. This is my situation. This is my product. It's my situation. Bhagavan gave me this situation. This is what it is. So what can I do in this situation? And this, what's being asked of me?
So it's like better to follow one's own dharma and make and be at fault than following somebody else's dharma and be right.
Yeah, that's the first thing. It's true. Because you're on following your own dharma, you know, then you can... We make these mistakes and on those mistakes. Those are sadhanas. If you're making some mistake, that's a sadhana. It's something to work on. That's all.
Is that the same as when you say, you know, it's like, you know, yours is yours, and that person's
his karma. This is my karma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's keeping the other person outside.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
That's another way we use it. Let this person be who they are. Allow them to be who they are. Give them their space to be. Sounds obvious, doesn't it?
It sounds obvious.
It sounds obvious, but we don't tend to do that until you do. But you know what? When you can do that, it's a great gift to yourself. Along with, of course, to the other person. What a relief that you're actually, the way you are is actually fine. But there's nobody that other person, you know, isn't always wanting to make you be somebody else. You're given the freedom, and it's a respect also. You're given that freedom and that respect. We're all working on ourselves. We feel this person, you know, they should be doing this and they should be doing that, and they're not working on themselves or whatever we do, whatever kind of thing that we do. You know.
It's kind of hard though when they're in your face.
Well, you know what? How that becomes is you can think of it like this. Okay, I guess Bhagavan thinks I'm ready for this one. because there are things when they're hard, like that, they're a sadhana. And what I've noticed is that Bhagavan is very good at giving you your next thing.
Yes.
and your next thing is not easy. Otherwise, it's not your next thing. That's already accomplished. And so you will have challenges. I've even noticed that in my life, the next challenge will come. It's just that when you have you have knowledge and you have your tool, your little toolkit, you become very adept at handling these things, but it's not that they don't come.
It seems like there's a point, though, where... I mean, I'm thinking of movies, okay? I've got a couple examples. One, like the classic boot camp.
Yeah.
Military, we had, you know, the trainer yelling at these people and saying all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Stand there still.
Yeah.
You know, and that's hard enough to imagine. Then there was this movie. I don't recommend it. It was an awful movie, but it had an interesting thing. It was called Bad Lieutenant. And this nun was raped by two altar boys. It was a horrible thing. And the cops couldn't get her. They had a hard time convicting these guys because they couldn't get the nun to testify because she had this philosophy that the needy take what they need. And that's what they needed, so I let them do that. You know, it was awful for her. I mean, she got beaten and unconscious and you know, bloody. And I mean, it was horrible. You know, but what's the point where you draw the line?
Oh, okay, that's a really good question.
Yeah.
Because...
With yourself.
Yeah, but you see, being able to give people their space, keep them outside, allow them to be who they are, doesn't have to do with you not making decisions about what is appropriate action in a given situation.
Mm-hmm.
It does say something about your own shanti and your own sense of well-being in that situation. Like, somebody may be acting out and doing some wrong actions and all of that, and you have to respond to that. But that's just on an objective, practical level. A response is required. But that doesn't mean internally that you've taken this on in an emotional way, where your life is being ruined, or your time is being ruined because of the way this person is behaving. Then you've taken them inside. So you have to keep these two things straight, because certain situations in life have to be handled, right? But it's also, once you don't have that anger inside and you handle something objectively, the other person also isn't going to be feeling hatred from you or dislike from you. It's just that the situation has to be handled. That's totally different. That creates a whole different atmosphere. Like, say, you can even imagine it in your mind, like this person who's totally in your face, doing whatever, and being really very problematic. They can get inside of you so that you're very tense and tight and upset and angry, and then just trying to control yourself as you're trying to handle this situation, but there's a lot of emotion and rage and anger and all kinds of feelings taking place. Or you don't let them inside, and you're just dealing with the situation. And I think that it's preferable to be able to still have your own shanti and your own well-being and deal with this problematic situation. That's being objective. So that's what we would be working. That would be working for. Like, if somebody, say somebody really hurts your feelings, you can be acting out of those hurt feelings, or you can be more interested in resolving those feelings internally, so that then you can handle that situation with that person, whatever it is, objectively, where your well-being is not at stake. Your well-being need not be at stake,
mm-hmm.
to handle things objectively, but that takes skill, and it takes time, and it takes a wanting to learn how to do that.
And in the meantime, you have to handle the situations.
That's right.
Even though you might not be completely objective.
Yeah, you have to do the best you can. But a lot of times, when you go home, you can kind of relive that and be with it and dialogue with it and be present to all of those feelings and welcome all of those feelings, not push them away, and then to even talk to them and ask them, you know, tell me what's really you're afraid of, or what's really hurting you. No pushing away. And just being there objectively present to in a helpful way with those feelings. See what I mean? So you can't, it depends. You can't always do everything on the spot, because you've already been hurt and overwhelmed. But you can do something afterwards by going back to it inside. Later on, that's mastered by you. You do it on the spot because you can do that. But maybe you can't do that at first. That's fine.
That seems so strange, though, that, like, and I've had this experience even recently where, say, somebody hurts your feelings and you remind yourself that your wholeness is not at stake, and you really know that. Like, it's not just something you're saying, like, I know for sure that that's true,
yeah.
But it doesn't help completely. It just helps a little bit.
But what I would say, what does help completely is there's two stages then. First is the welcoming those feelings so that you don't push them away.
Yeah.
That's a very important part. And then, they're probably still lingering there. Then you talk to them and find out what's really hurting you, just on a psychological level, what it really is. So you have that dialogue, you know. And then, after that resolves it to some degree, and then you start bringing your knowledge in and owning up your own wholeness, and that, in fact, it's inviolate. Nobody can take that away from you. The only thing that takes it away from you is you acting out, you forgetting that fact, right, and producing pain. But then you'd have the tools to bring, to welcome that pain, to understand what's going on, and to resolve it. And the more you work with that, the better you get at it. It's a skill called Kaushalam. Karma Yoga involves that. It's mostly attitude, but there's skill involved. Like, skill, how do you, if they have courses like this in business, how to handle the difficult employee, how to handle the difficult boss, how to handle this type of situation. Here, where you're gaining like skill in it, but Kaushalam means skill in action. How to be with these situations that cause me pain in a way that is really efficacious, that really helps, and owns up my knowledge at the same time. So that's why most of the meditations that we do and talking and whatnot, we're talking about these, and then you have to, you see them at the time of teaching, but then you have to bring them alive when you're in the middle of the situation. You can do it imaginally. That helps too. Like, say there's one person that's always causing you a lot of pain, like at work. Yeah, I had that one guy for years that I had to grow to for that to be okay. And then, of course, he left. Once we were friends.
You actually became friends?
Yeah, we did. It took a long time. It wouldn't take a long time now, though. It took a long time then. Because my value for working on it in the way that I would do now wasn't that strong. That's what I mean. I know for myself that there's a certain amount of maturity that takes place that allows you to have as your what is primary to you is to work on these issues so that they're resolved. What's important is knowledge, is your own shanti. Yeah, and doing what is to be done here. That takes time.
Because if there's shanti, then you know who you are.
Even now, when if your mind takes you on rides, when your mind comes back, that shanti, you do know who you are. But the mind still has whatever capacity it has to take you on its little rifts. That can be hurtful and overwhelming and all of that, but you're gaining the skills to bring the mind back to your knowledge, but then you have to utilize those skills. The meditation. Even the things that we do in meditation, those are just the way you are in life. We sit, do this slow motion. Life in slow motion is a meditation. Right? We just slow everything way down, but actually all of those things are just what the mind naturally does day to day, moment to moment, in light of your knowledge as you get used to that. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, everything you say makes sense. It just takes a while for me to understand it.
Yeah, it has to.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it does. You have to look at these difficult people as, okay,
as gifts.
This is what Bhagavan's giving me now. This is it.
Don't you always say, you know, Bhagavan wouldn't give it to you unless you had the strength to meet it.
Yeah, you're ready. You're just right for this now. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Well, what's the other option?
I don't feel like I have
the other object is
fighting it. That's worse, though.
But that's a discovery.
Avoiding it.
Avoiding it, fighting it. These are all just natural. Hating it, being bitter, all of these things, that's natural samsara reactions.
Mm-hmm.
Our reactions are the total opposite. They're counterintuitive until you do them and you realize they're not really counterintuitive. There's exactly what needs to be done. It's the exact opposite of what we are kind of inclined to do until you know. I have Bhagishanande so good at this. He calls it the weather, all of these things. Oh, it's a stormy weather. Yeah, stormy weather. I love stormy weather. Come, 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 come. Come in. he's so funny. But he's really a yoni. He's not kidding. He's really, he's very, very interesting guy. But I think that's so brilliant just to think of all these emotions as the weather. He's in Bali. I'm going to say there's a difficult person or something. Some person who's very got a painful type person, a hurtful person. Please come in. He has a good sense of humor. But there's something beautiful about that. You know, it's like you just totally welcome whatever these weird situations are or difficult situations. Like this guy, you would say, oh my goodness, I'm so happy you're here. Please come in. Come in and be with me. I'm so happy to have you. It's nice to have a little humor.
That's what you said to me today when I showed up.
What?
Please come in.
You welcome all difficult people.
How should I be taking this?
It's open to so many interpretations.
You mean you think I only say that to the people who are difficult?
I'm just teasing.
I know you are. Everybody else, oh, come on in, come in.
Yeah.
Difficult. Oh, please come in.
Yeah.
All those people come in.
But you got to have tools, though.
You use Vajishashanta.
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, all the guy does is chants. He's constantly chanting.
He does chant a lot, but he also
constantly.
He's
not standing in court.
He loves chanting, and he has a beautiful voice for chanting. That's something that he does so beautifully.
Yeah.
He's also a jnani. He also has knowledge. He also has psychology. He knows.
Mm-hmm.
He knows all these things. And he loves to chant. And chanting is a very beautiful thing. I love to chant, too.
And he's a big guy.
You
don't
want
to mess with him.
He's big, tall.
Yeah, so sorry, Radha. Sorry. I'm sorry.
Om Tat Sat.
Om Tat Sat.
You didn't do anything.
Well, I did.
That's
Manana.
He's
okay.
Beautiful.
I'm just trying to help Michael.
I know.
He's a lawyer, and he's in the midst of the samsaric... thickness.
That's your challenge. Yeah, it is.
But being
the
Swami is not necessarily easier, though, because everyone's coming basically with their problems to that person.
Being a Swami doesn't lighten the load at
all.
That's
the thing.
No, it does not at all. It doesn't make it heavier either. It doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
It depends if you take sannyasa when you're ready for it. You're still dealing with whatever it is inside you have to deal with. The problems are internal. They're not external. One example I like if you're deciding to buy a Volvo, you're going to get a new car, you decided you're going to buy a Volvo. Then when you're driving around, you see all the Volvos. Because you've got Volvo on your mind, so you see all the Volvos. It's the same if you have any emotional weakness inside, then everything that can trigger that will trigger it. And then you think, oh my God, it just... First, this person came and I thought I was over it, and now this person has come. That's not what it is. It's the Volvos. That's all it is. Because these things are everywhere. These problems are everywhere for the person who has that particular... sore spot, tenderness. So you look over here, there it is. Look over here, there it is. It's always after you. It's chasing after you. But when that problem is gone, you don't see it anymore. It's not that it's not there, but it's not triggering you.
What does Ramadan say? You have to have the button for someone to be able to push it?
Yeah,
exactly.
They couldn't hurt you if there wasn't something in there that was raw. Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we have to... What we need to do is be with that, with these techniques, and understand our knowledge, and also with understanding the different ways to be with it. And there's many different ways. So it depends on what it is, which is the tools that you have is the best way at this particular time to be with that in a healing way. It's a kind of exciting, you know, once this is your primary job, I mean, what your life is about, then that's what you do. That's what we're doing. That's our job. It's our work. That's why we're here. Nothing else. And this is all our field for it. It's nice. Couldn't be better. Yeah. Okay, let's stop.
Well, since Evelyn isn't here, I say, great class.
Can we go a little longer?
Yeah, can we do this verse again? It's 30 pages of commentary.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, and there's going to be, there's another longer one. That's good.
We got about halfway through it or something.
So that's why I'm, if just spend, take your time on it and enjoy it.